Okay, hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Almost Peaking Podcast. I'm joined today by Grace Walker.
Hello.
There we go. I'm so excited to have her here. I'm excited
to be here. This is thrilling.
Okay, so starting out, Grace, you are coming here from a rehearsal. Do you want to tell me a little bit about the project you're involved in right now?
Yes. So I am a part of The Wolves by Sarah DeLapp. I'm playing number 7. All of the characters are named after their jersey numbers, which is really awesome. The playwright didn't necessarily want people to be romanticized in the show. She didn't want the women to be romanticized, which is really awesome. So yeah, the show is about 9 women who are a part of an indoor soccer team. They're all in high school, and basically the show follows them as they warm up, they negotiate growing up, and fight battles, big and small, with each other, and also with themselves.
Ooh, wow. Okay, see, there we go.
Deep, right?
That sounds deep.
Oh, yeah.
And you were telling me it's really cool because this is one of the first all-female shows. It's through Mac University.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the first all-female shows they've done in a couple years now, right?
Yes. So ever since I've been at AU, we've always wanted to do an all-female show, but it's hard to find them. It's really hard to find an ensemble show with all women. So this is the first one we've done in a few years, and it's really exciting, and it's a really, really great play. It was a 2017 Pulitzer Prize finalist, so you know it's good. And I really want people to come out and see it because it's such an important show, and I think it's really relevant to the times that we're living in. So, yeah.
So just to give a quick little tag out of that, dates and times that it's going to be and how people
get
tickets.
Yes. So you can buy tickets by looking at the AU Arts page. You can also follow us on Instagram at The Wolves AU, as well as our Twitter account, AU_Wolves. Check us out. And also the show is going to be on President's Day weekend, so February 14th, which is a Thursday at 8 p.m., as well as Friday night at 8 p.m., and then on Saturday night, February 16th, at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. So check us out. It's going to be a really, really great show.
And that's going to be here in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
At Greenberg Theater, which is in Tenleytown on the Red Line. Pretty accessible, I'd
say. Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of all-female shows, you recently directed one.
I did.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah.
I saw it. I thought it was incredible.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm curious to know what your background with that play is and what drew you to it.
So I directed Steel Magnolias with AU Players, which is a student group on American University's campus. And basically, I really wanted to explore this play once again. I did it in high school. I played Shelby. I'm a type 1 diabetic, so the show was something that was really personal to me. And I always wanted to direct it, but I was really scared to. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm going to see what it's like, you know? And so, yeah, I got to direct it with them in the Studio Theater, which is our black box theater on campus. And it was a really, really great experience. And all the women were so amazing. And I just really love working with all female casts because I think that there's something really beautiful about seeing all women work together. And to have a space like that, you don't necessarily get to experience that a lot in your life. So it was really cool and something I wouldn't have traded for anything in the world.
That was really sweet.
Thank you.
I wish I was part of your play now. Wow.
Just saying. If you want to work with me, Grace Walker, follow me on Instagram. Three R's at the end. Thank you.
So with that, I'm curious, because you've done acting for a while.
Yeah.
You got involved. How old were you when you first got involved with
that? I started acting when I was about, let's see, I think my first show was when I was 4, but yeah. I took a break during middle school because I was angsty.
I was definitely an angsty phase.
Oh yeah, I was I don't want to do theater, it sucks, no. And then I auditioned for the spring musical my freshman year, and I got a really great part, and I got to be in this amazing show, and I fell in love with it again, and that was that, you know?
So with that, what was the biggest challenge going from that actor role to the director role with Steel Magnolias?
I struggled with directing the woman who played Shelby because she was so amazing and incredible and such a pleasure to work with. But there were times where it was hard to take off the actor hat and put on the director hat because I struggled with, you know, what do I tell her? What notes do I give her? And what are, like, what are powerful notes that I can give her as a director rather than somebody who is like, oh, I've played this role and this is how you should do it. Because I don't want to, I didn't want her to play it the way that I did. And I don't think she did. Like, at the end, it was so, the way that she brought truth to that character was so beautiful and amazing and truly one of my, you know, joys of seeing the show. So, yeah, but it was definitely hard doing that.
And you mentioned to me you're a type 1 diabetic.
Yeah.
And you've been really awesome with, like, advocacy for those kind of things. And from what I've heard from you, and involvement in different, like, causes, trying to raise, I guess, awareness, is it? Or is it, what's the term there?
Yeah, raise awareness, you know? Raise money for a cure.
Do you think that background made it easier to play the role of Shelby when you played it yourself, or harder because you had to kind of disconnect a little bit? I guess, like, to give context to, in Steel Magnolias, one of the main characters is a type 1 diabetic and, like, suffers different episodes throughout the show.
Yeah. It was interesting because when I was in the show and I played Shelby, it wasn't necessarily a really hard thing for me to do. It was actually a really great experience because I was playing a role that was so similar to me. But then when I was directing the show, it was almost harder. Like, there were a lot of things that I had to face because in the end of the show, spoiler alert, Shelby passes away. And
which I didn't know when I saw the movie. I wanted to go in thinking I thought it was going to be an uplifting movie. It was under, like, the best movies to watch after you get dumped.
Oh, yeah.
I was needing it over the summer, and I watched it, and I was crying. And I was I didn't need this. I didn't know it was a sad movie.
It's horribly sad. It's horribly sad, but it's so beautiful. And to see the way that the women come together at the end is so incredible. But definitely directing it and having to face that last scene and having to talk to my cast about what it means to see somebody with this disease pass away, like, that was really challenging because I've had people in my life who have passed away from type 1 diabetes, and it's not easy. So that was definitely a struggle for me. But it was also a really nice challenge. So I really appreciate that experience.
Okay, so after that, you directed. Now you're back in the actor.
Yeah.
Is it weird switching? Does it give you a different perspective?
Yeah, no, it is kind of strange. I do have to be honest with that. It's interesting because I find myself as an actor, like, sitting there and I'm, like, trying to, you know, go through my scenes or whatever, go through my lines, and I find myself directing myself and I'm like, no, like, just be in it. Like, be an actor. You're not a director anymore. Like, stop trying to direct yourself. So it's but it's definitely a different experience, but I've really missed acting, and it's so nice to be on stage and to play a character like Seven, who is so complex and not an archetype at all. Like, she is so multifaceted, and I know every female actor says that about every role that they play.
I mean,
but
I feel like the problem is not enough female actors are able to say that about the roles they play.
But I feel like a lot of women say that, but then in reality, you know, you go and see the show and the character they're playing, like, oh my god, like, they, you know, you thought that they were doing this, but in reality, like, they're doing this. And that's the complexity of who they are, well, you know?
What's that test they have it so it's like to
Bechdel
see?
Test.
The Bechdel test. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to know your thoughts on that.
Yes.
As someone who's involved in theater and different things, because I've always thought it was interesting, but I've seen a lot of things online where it's like, that's still not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's not possible. And so many movies fail it that you would expect to pass. Kind
Absolutely.
Of thing.
I think that it's a good test to have just to see, like, you know, are we creating characters that are interesting for women to play? And is this something that truly represents the female experience right now? I do think that it could be improved, most definitely. And I also think it's interesting, too, because when I look at a show like The Wolves, like, the characters in The Wolves are so, they are not archetypes at all. They really are not. Like, my character is somebody who yells the F word, but then also, like, and says such insensitive things, but then has this whole monologue where she's talking about, you know, immigrant children and how much she feels for them and how horrible their experience must be. And, like, you know, so it's so, she doesn't make any sense, but that's human beings. You know what I mean? Like, we do not make sense. We are complex. We are interesting. We are, you know, we conflict in every single way. And I think that a lot of times female characters don't necessarily show that. And so I think it's cool to see a show that really does highlight that. And I think that as female actors, at least what I've noticed is I want to get more comfortable with those feelings, you know?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, I'm kind of curious.
Yeah.
How does preparing for a role like that differ from a more stereotypical female role?
Yeah. Well, when I was in high school, I was in Greece, and
There we go.
Shout out to Mickey Blaine. I love him. It was like my high school theater experience was amazing, and I absolutely loved it. But this show was not necessarily the best show for women. You know what I mean? And I played Marty, who was a joy to play. Like, she was so fun.
Yeah.
But I remember throughout the show, I kept thinking, oh, I have to play a slut. And I have to, like, charm the audience. And I have to be, you know, rude in this scene. And then I have to be, like, you know, scandalous in this scene. And when I approach a character like Seven, I have to remind myself, like, there are times where I look at Seven and I'm like, oh, she's the rebel of the group. Mm-hmm. But by saying that she's the rebel of the group, I'm belittling. Yeah, like, I'm belittling her experience, and I'm putting her into some archetype that she's not. Mm-hmm. She's not just a rebel. She's somebody who's compassionate, and she has feelings, and she's so passionate to a point where it's dangerous for her, you know? And she's so much more than just, like, one thing. And so I think that's the main difference. There's so much more to discover with a character who's way more complex, whereas with a character that's kind of one-sided, you're, you know.
You kind of can play that up.
Yeah, and it's not.
Fall back on it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of actors learn how to charm their way into being those roles rather than, like, telling the truth. And I don't blame them. I mean, look at the text. It's not always the best, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think giving more opportunities for women to, like, go out there and, mm-hmm. you know, be women on stage.
Be a real person.
Yeah, like, be a real person. It's just insane. And I think it's so crazy when playwrights are like, oh, it's hard to write female characters. Like, no, it's not. Just write them as a person. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's kind of crazy to me. But, yeah.
And you grew up in Southern California.
I did.
And I'm kind of curious, you know, because I think people think of, like, L.A. Mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And it's film. It's Hollywood. Why didn't you
do film?
And how did you get into theater in that environment?
Yeah. My director in high school absolutely loved, like, film. And he still does it. He's a big fan of it. I personally gravitated towards theater because, to be honest with you, and this is, like, kind of horrible for me to say, but I felt like I wasn't pretty enough to be in film. Because, you look at film and everybody's like, a stick. And I'm not a stick. You know what I mean? So it's like,
you're beautiful and perfect
the way you are. No, but, like, it's just, I never felt comfortable on a screen. And I always felt like I was thinking about the way that I looked and all that stuff. And when I'm on stage, like, I care about telling the truth and only the truth through my characters. And so that's what I love about.
Very legal.
Thank you. But that's what I love about, you know, doing theater is that you're there, you're in the moment, you're interacting with an audience, their energy is bouncing off of yours, and so it's really exciting. And I just prefer theater over, you know, film.
Move this before it falls. And every point in every episode of my podcast, I like to ask the guest a question.
Yes.
Which is, can you tell me about a point in your life when you were almost peaking? Because this podcast is called Almost Peaking.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to know what that moment would be for you.
Peaking. I don't know. I feel like this is going to sound so existential. But I feel like if you are an actor, your whole life is, you know, peaks and valleys. Like, really, because it's like, you know, you'll get the big part and Aubrey's laughing at me right now.
That actually picks up on, like, the eyebrow raise.
Okay, cool. But, you know, you get the big part and you're so happy and you're living your best life, and then you'll audition for the next show and, like, you won't even get a call back, you know? And so I feel like throughout my life that's kind of been a journey, and I used to care so much about that. Mm-hmm. Like, so much. And I still do, but I think when I enter the audition space now, I do it because I love it, and I try to remind myself, like, I'm just going in there and I'm going to show them what I love to do, and if they appreciate it, then they appreciate it, and if they don't, then, like, you know what, I'm just going to work harder next time. So I'm trying to, like, live a more chill life. I'm trying to trust myself more.
That's
so my acting teacher told me. He was like, I was like, you're right. So, yeah. That's pretty much my
Is there a particular
peak.
I guess, time when you were like, that illustrates that experience.
Yeah. I would say, okay, so I was in Othello last semester and I played Bianca and it was a really amazing experience and I had so much fun with that role. And I remember there was a critic who came and he wrote this like really awesome, nice paragraph about me. Not paragraph, what am I saying? It was like two sentences. Sorry, that was so annoying. I'm so sorry. But he wrote
You would have believed it was a paragraph, too.
No, but like, I wrote, no, like, he, like, it was literally two sentences. But it was really nice. Mm-hmm. And he basically was saying, like, you know, that I did a great job. And I, at that point in my career, I didn't really have a lot of confidence in myself. And I really struggled with that. And so just hearing that was really, really nice. And I went in to audition for our next department show and I was like, oh my god, this show, like, it's totally my vibe, I'm ready for it, like, I have to put in all this work and I have to put all my eggs in one bag, like, you know what I mean? And I worked so hard for that audition. Yeah. And I, like, it was like everything and I was like, I need to try so hard. And I ended up going into the audition and I put so much work into it that I literally blew it. Because I was like, I went in there and I was like, hi, I'm going to read this and you know, and I was frantic the whole time and I wasn't living in the moment of the text. And so I, like, obviously did not get cast and I was really heartbroken about that. And then I decided, I was like, you know what, I'm going to take the third acting class, even though, like, the third acting class that we can take at American University. And I was nervous because the professor is very amazing and highly acclaimed and an incredible person. But everybody says he's very hard to impress. So I was really nervous to take it. But I took it anyways. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to see what he has to say because I want to improve. And then here I am in the Wolves. So I feel like he definitely helped. But I think that was a moment for me where I felt like I was like peaking. And then
You got to get that reality check sometimes.
Yeah. And it was really good. Like, I'm glad that I didn't get in this show earlier because that, you know, I wouldn't have directed Steel Magnolias and I wouldn't have taken my, you know, the third acting class here, which changed my life. So
it's one of those, like, when one door closes, another one opens.
Seriously. Yeah. And I strongly believe that, like, everything happens for a reason. So, you know, it ended up working out and I'm really happy about it. So, yeah.
That's awesome. That's one of those things that I've really been trying to focus on in the new year, or, like, kind of in general, is. Because I tend to get the same way where it's like I'll focus on something and you kind of get your heart set on something.
Mm-hmm.
And in your head, you kind of convince yourself like this is a guaranteed thing or this is a sure shot. And just kind of like that disappointment if that doesn't happen can be so devastating. And it's so important to take that moment and be like, I can bounce back.
Yeah.
Like, there is something right around the corner. Again, that whole everything happens for a reason is so important.
I
know for me, I applied for like a radio program when I was 15. Made to the final round of interviews and they were like, no, you didn't make it. Like, they chose five people and I was like, I hate radio. I'll never do anything with audio ever again.
Yeah.
I'll never listen to NPR again. The next spring, they sent me like a text message that was like, apply again. And I was like, maybe I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
I did it and here I am now. So it's, you never know.
No, exactly. And
it could
I always
be instant, it could be longer.
Yeah. And I always tell people, like, if you don't get cast in a show one semester during college, like, go and do something else, you know, like make it worth your while, because I think that's so important. Like, yeah, like I don't regret directing Steel Magnolias. I'm so happy that I did that. And I would have preferred to do that than be in a show at that point in my life, you know, and it was what I needed at that moment. So, yeah, I always say, like, if one door closes again, like, open another one. Exactly. It's so important.
And speaking of not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yes.
You're also a PR major.
I am.
Here, which I think is really interesting. I'm curious, how do you balance, first of all, I know it's hard enough to do plays, like, in high school or growing up while you're doing school, but in college, how do you find the time for that? And because you already have so much classwork. So there's not that much overlap there, I'd assume. How do you balance it all?
It's definitely challenging. But for me, I just have to really prioritize what I need to get done. I think during my sophomore year, I really wanted to be around friends all the time. And I was like, I need to, like, always be around people. And what's cool about my junior year is now I feel like I've settled in. I know who I am. And so I can take the time to like focus on work and focus on my schoolwork and, you know, my internship and all that stuff. So I definitely think planning ahead is important. I think that if you want to pursue two majors, you should definitely do it because it's like, it's definitely working out for me. And I also, people always tell me, they're like, PR and theater, that's so different. But if you look at PR and theater, they're so similar. Like, they both follow objectives and they use strategies to get there. And like, there's so many similarities. And when you're, you know, working for PR, like, you're going to walk into a room and you're going to have to talk to people. And what's cool about theater is that it gets you prepared for that. It teaches you how to do the research. It teaches you how to do the work. It teaches you how to connect with people, to empathize with people's experiences. So I don't know. I think that my majors like really work well together. And yeah, I really enjoy it. But definitely planning ahead helps.
I was going to say too, because you've also kind of found a unique way to combine the two with internships.
Yes.
And things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm still, I have no idea how you manage to do your schedule.
I don't know either.
So much on your plate, which is so incredible because every time I open Facebook, you're inviting me to a new show that you're in or again, directing.
Stop it.
Or some event. And you're also involved in Greek life on mm-hmm. campus. And you do so much. And being your friend, I know that you're someone... Yes, you're impossible to get a hold of. This took forever to book. This is a very exclusive.
Truly, I'm so sorry.
But you're always there if I need you. Mm-hmm. And you're such an incredible person in that sense.
Aww. T.Y.
And so
that means
I'm just
thank you.
Constantly amazed by all the juggling happening mm-hmm. in your life.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
One thing I am kind of curious about, too, I know you've told me before you did a lot of work with JDRF.
Mm-hmm.
You've done a lot of stuff. There was like a type 1 diabetes camp or I don't know.
Yes.
How
yeah.
How did you get involved with that and what inspired you to kind yeah. of work? Because it's really incredible from what I've
thank
heard.
Thank you.
From all like the impact that you've been able to have like on other people
yeah,
through that.
Absolutely. I got involved with JDRF through my mom because she was really passionate about type 1 diabetes research. My brother was diagnosed with type 1 when he was 7 and I was diagnosed when I was 12 and my brother's older than me. So I have always known about type 1 diabetes since I was like 3 or 4 years old. It's always been a part of my life. So when I got diagnosed, I became very active in the community because it was something that, again, was always very familiar for me. Not every type 1 diabetic is... Sorry, a lot of people don't like it when I say type 1 diabetic. Some people don't like it when you refer to type 1 diabetics as type 1 diabetics. I refer to myself as a type 1 diabetic, so I'm okay with it, but
like
I just want to explain that.
That's like...
Some people like to, they would prefer to be a person with type 1 diabetes than
okay.
a type 1 diabetic.
Interesting, okay.
For me, I'm like, you know.
Yeah, I can understand,
call me
though.
A tomato, I'm okay, you know? thank you.
Okay, tomato.
These are the jokes. Okay, so, but yeah, so I started working at this camp because I grew up there. I went to this camp since I was like... 12 years old, and all of my best friends go there, and it's a really awesome place to go, and I love the kids. They're really awesome, and yeah, I just think it's really important to talk about this because a lot of people feel like disability is something that we can't talk about,
mm-hmm.
and I think that it really does affect a lot of people. Like, what, 1 in 2 people have a, you know, yeah, I think so. Like, 1 in 2 people have a chronic illness.
That's crazy.
Or a chronic disease,
yeah.
Which is insane. I don't know if that's correct, so don't quote me on that. But we don't talk about it enough. We really don't. And it's hard sometimes because even in this process with the Wolves, like, I'm a type 1 diabetic doing a show that involves soccer. Like, that's really hard. Mm-hmm. And we're running around the whole time. Like, we're constantly doing warm-up routines and exercises and high knees and butt kicks, and it's really hard to manage. And it's tough sometimes because people don't always feel comfortable talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I always encourage people to ask questions. Like, if you ever have any questions about type 1, like, just ask me because I'm so comfortable talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I would rather have people ask me those questions than say something that's insensitive that will hurt mm-hmm. my feelings.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's...
On the basic level... Just because I know you had to explain this to me, what mm-hmm. is type 1 diabetes?
Yeah, so type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. Basically what happens is your body has a hormone called insulin, which regulates your blood sugar levels. And my body doesn't produce insulin, so I have to take man-made insulin, which was invented in like the 19... whatever. year. And so, yeah, I basically, like, have to take insulin shots. I'm on an insulin pump right now, so that means it kind of does the math for me. Mm-hmm. So I, like, enter in my blood sugar, and then I, like, say how many carbs I'm going to have, and then it gives me the insulin, and, yeah, it's a fun time. But at the most basic level, yeah, type 1 diabetes, we have to regulate our own blood sugars by using man-made insulin. We have to test our blood sugars about 5 times a day to, like, 7 times a day. Some people test even more. It's something that you don't get a break from. It's constantly a part of your life. And, yeah, it's really not easy. And, I mean, there are people I know who were diagnosed when they were 6 months old. Wow. Yeah. So imagine, like, you as a parent giving your 6-month-old an insulin shot. Like, I can can't imagine. Like, oh, yeah.
You know.
Like giving 7-year-olds insulin shots to me is already so traumatizing. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine giving it to, like, my kid, you know, who's, like, 6 months old. Like, it's just crazy to me.
And it's one of those things, too, where it's not, like, lifestyle-based, right?
Mm-hmm. No. So, basically, like, you can get diagnosed with diabetes at any age, really. It's more prone in kids and young adults. But that being said, like, any age can get diagnosed with this disease. Basically, they don't know what causes type 1 diabetes. They still aren't aware. Yeah, they do know that if you have somebody in your family with type 1, you are more at risk to get type 1 diabetes. So that's also a thing. And also, like, something that part of the reason why I wanted to direct Steel Magnolias is because it's a one piece of media out there that really discusses type 1 diabetes in a realistic way. Yeah. Like, even though it's horrible, and even though I know a lot of the type 1 diabetic community doesn't want to, like I know a lot of the type 1 diabetic community doesn't necessarily like Steel Magnolias because of the ending. Mm-hmm. I personally like it because I think it's truthful. Mm-hmm. The 80s, it was not easy to deal with type 1 diabetes. It was really, really hard. And, you know, I can't imagine what the real Shelby had to go through to have a baby and to, like, have this disease is really hard already. So, yeah, I think that that's also a big problem with the way that we treat disability. We often create shows and movies and plays that don't spread the right information about these diseases or about these illnesses.
Or if they do, it's like kind of boring, informative things.
Seriously, like in I think it's called Panic Room with Kristen Stewart and Jodie Foster. Like, Kristen Stewart plays a type 1 diabetic and she has an extreme, like, low blood sugar and she's seizing and her mom gives her an insulin shot. Which, like, if you ever did that to a type 1 diabetic when they were seizing, they would die. Wait, like, really? Literally die, yeah. So, like, stuff like that, like, who knows? Somebody could be around a type 1 diabetic having a seizure. Exactly. And it could kill people. And nobody talks about that. And it's so dangerous. And it frustrates me because we don't talk about that. And it's like, literally, this could kill somebody someday, you know? And it's just one little,
include that in a film.
Oh, and it happens all the time, you know? Like, oh, yeah, they did an episode of Hannah Montana where Mitchell Musso's character got type 1 diabetes. And, like, the way that he tests his blood sugar, he just brings out his meter and they don't even show him, like, pricking his finger or, like, the process of testing his blood sugar correctly, which is a minor thing. But, like, it's a big deal when you're a kid and you're watching somebody represent your experience, you know?
Do you think that could be just, like, a regulation with, like, showing needles or things like that?
I mean, I don't know.
That's,
yeah,
like a weird, like, PG, PG-13, G rating thing.
I mean, it might be that, but also at the same time, like, if there are 4-year-olds giving themselves an insulin shot or pricking their finger, you know, you should be able to show that on TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, the way that these prickers work, they don't always show the needle, so he could literally have done that without showing the needle. Mm-hmm. It would have just been, like, you know, a thing that is a pricker just, like, hitting his finger. Yeah. So I think there were ways for them to address it and to include it. But it's stuff like that that I think it's hard for kids to watch TV and to feel like they're not being
represented.
Yeah.
And this is something that you've, as you said, you've had been diagnosed for a while. It's been, like, is it 10 years now or over 10 years?
It's 9, I think.
9, okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So that's long.
Anniversary's coming.
I know.
With that, I mean, it's been so long. Do you ever, I guess, forget that it's a thing? Does it become a part of your routine at some point or another? Or is it something that you feel aware of a lot?
I think it's dangerous when I don't take it into consideration. Like, there are days where I'll walk out and I'm like, my disease doesn't affect me. But the minute I say that, it's the minute that I'm not monitoring it. And it's kind of crazy because when you grow up, you know, your parents are always there and they're always checking in on you to make sure your blood sugar's okay. And they're constantly reminding you that you have this disease. And then when you go to college, I know a lot of kids struggle with their disease when they go to college. And it's because it's like, it's so hard to manage it on your own. And it's crazy because, you know, you'll go and talk to people and like some people don't even, like some of my friends, like literally they'll be like, oh, I forgot you had diabetes, you know? And that to me is like whenever any of my friends say that, I know it's for me, that's like a way to check myself because I'm like, if they don't know that I have this, like that means I have to be testing more. That means I have to like make it more of a presence in my life because it is a presence in my life. So, yeah, it's definitely, I don't know if that, does that answer a question?
No, that is, I was also going to kind of follow up with the wolves. You mentioned that it can be hard because you're doing so much soccer and it's, you've told me like your practices and your rehearsals for this stuff gets very physical.
Absolutely.
What's required. I mean, you came in here and you're like, I got to eat some sugar.
Oh, yeah.
does having type 1 diabetes make it, like, come into consideration when you're auditioning for things or taking
Absolutely.
Another role? And how has that impacted?
Yeah. I really worried that I wasn't going to get cast in this show because I thought there was no way that the director was going to cast somebody who has a disease like this. And, like our director is absolutely incredible, and she would never do that. But I worried about that. And I know that a lot of people were like, oh, come on, Grace, it's fine. But, like, unless you're in that situation, you just don't know. I worry about it because I think that it is a, it's an extra, quote-unquote, burden that other people don't have to deal with. Stage managers don't have to worry about people's blood sugars all the time, and they happen to have to worry about mine. So it is scary going into the audition room. But also I know, like, I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, trying to act like my experience is harder than other actors. There are a lot of, you know, young actors out there who really struggle in the casting room. And I'm lucky to have a disease that isn't always shown. I can walk into a casting room and they don't know I'm a type 1 diabetic. And I'm really lucky for that. So I definitely acknowledge my privilege and understand how lucky I am. But it's hard. It's hard going into a casting room and being like, hi, I want to do a physical show, but I also have this. So please take that into consideration.
And going to the casting room, what is your best advice for someone who's interested in doing theater
or
wants to be better at it?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I'm, like, equipped enough for this. I would say, I don't know, this is something I learned this year. Again, I'm not an expert. I'm, like, just a college student. But this year, I realized that when I go into the audition room, I can't psych myself out. I have to just be there. I have to just do the thing. I almost said
I told
the
Grace
word.
We're cutting down on the swear words today. We're doing great.
It's hard. Okay. but, yeah, so I always say just go in there and, like, give your best shot. I know that's so basic, but just don't work it up in your brain, you know? Like, always have something to look forward to after the audition. You know, for me, it's like I'll think about, you know, oh, I'm going to go hang out with friends after this audition. So, like, I look forward to that. So that way I know I have something afterwards to look forward to. It's not just like, oh, I can't wait for the cast list. There's something else in my life. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is don't make theater your entire life because it's such a crazy industry, you know? You just gotta go with the flow.
Goosey-goosey, babe.
I literally, I feel like I just gave like 20 different pieces of advice.
Hey, I love your advice. It's great. Unfortunately, we are out of time today, but...
So sad.
Your time with Grace doesn't have to be up because the wolves...
Come and see the wolves, please. We really want people to come.
I'm so excited. Again.
Guys, it's going to be really good. Like, no joke, the cast is so good. Like, oh my God.
And just the idea of seeing an all-female show, I think,
and it's
such
a good
a unique,
show,
awesome
like
experience. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, like there are shows I invite my friends to, and I'm like, yeah, like come and see it because I'm in it. But like truly see the show, not just for me. I mean, like come and see me because I'm in it. But like come and see the show because literally it's such a good story.
And you and I were having a really interesting discussion the other day where you were telling me when people go out to support these productions that mm-hmm. have so many female actresses in them and have such awesome characters and roles for female actors, that shows the school or the production.
Yeah,
anyone,
definitely.
That there's an audience for this.
Exactly.
Which there absolutely is. You just have to show them.
Exactly. And I think that's something we really want to do. We want to show people that an all-female show can succeed. And it's going to be really good.
Succeed.
Oh, yes, it will. I hope so.
And so that's, what weekend is that again, you said?
It is President's Day weekend, so February 14th to February 16th. So definitely check it out. Greenberg Theater, Tenleytown.
I'm very excited.
Literally.
That's
get
matinee.
Ready. We're going to be up and front in your faces kicking soccer balls. It's going to be incredible.
If you want to follow Grace on social media, you can find her on
at Grace Walker, 3 R's at the end. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the
thank
the
you next. Myth. Just kidding.
You can find me at Aubrey Violetta on any social media platform. You can also find this show, Almost Peaking. It's on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play Store, and on my website, aubreyvioletta.com/almostpeaking. Like the page on Facebook. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining in. And thank you, Grace.
Thank you. And remember to follow the Wolves AU.
We
have a Facebook page, an Instagram page. Buy your tickets, please. Thank you.
Can you teach me some theater?
LOL. Sorry. Okay. Love you. Bye.